Mind symptoms. You find yourself precipitously sad, irritable, or annoyed for seemingly no reason whatsoever. You tend to lose focus and attention and get disoriented. You might be driving and realize you don't know why you're on that particular street. You lose clarity and speed in your thinking. Your memory seems like it's clouded. Your friends say you talk more than usual, but don't get to the point as much. Body symptoms. Your arms and legs feel shaky or tremulous. You're sleepy during the day and up at night. You see things out of the corner of your eye, like moving shadows. You feel restless, needing to pace, or move around for no reason. Your symptoms are unstable, meaning they can change from hour to hour and day to day. They tend to get worse around 4 p.m. If you have a number of these symptoms, you may have brain fog. People have called it by a variety of names, confusion, delirium, befuddlement, but most people just know the phrase brain fog. Continue to the following case and see if it rings a bell. Irene, I want my brain back. Irene came to me for a medical intuitive reading saying, I want my brain back. The intuitive reading. When I looked at Irene's mind intuitively, I saw her thoughts come to a halt. Like a car that had stalled after stopping at a stoplight, her thoughts had simply gotten stuck. It seemed like her life had stopped as well. I couldn't see a job, couldn't see a relationship, and had trouble seeing her leave home, actually. I had trouble seeing a companion. I had trouble seeing friends, colleagues. It felt like Irene was exiled. The body. Irene seemed to have problems with forgetfulness, focus, and attention. Intuitively, she seemed to experience dizziness and a problem with disorientation when she tried to read or watch TV over time. Her whole body seemed to ache, especially her neck. She seemed sad, but she seemed to actually minimize her physical problems. Intuitively, I sensed numbness and tingling on the left side of her body, especially her hands and her feet, which felt like they were asleep. The facts. Irene had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, but she said the doctors were full of baloney. She said, I want my brain back. Recently, she said she had fallen on the pavement, and the doctors did an MRI and found all kinds of plaques in her brain. Because of the fall and mistakes at work, she'd been forced into early retirement. Irene, an accountant, always took pride in being perfect at work. She just couldn't understand why people were finding mistakes. Recently, Irene had been staying home and offering to take care of her grandchildren. However, her family was calling her less and less due to some confusion over some mistakes she made during a recent babysitting stint. The solution. You needn't have a serious illness to have brain fog. There are a number of areas in your mind and body where problems can cause depression, confusion, and delirium. Infection, immune system problems like Lyme, flu, pneumonia, or viruses, autoimmune problems like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and so on, cancers and tumors, hormonal changes in menopause or perimenopause, changes in thyroid hormone, cortisol, or testosterone, to name only a few, unstable blood sugar, medicines, be they pain pills, sleeping pills, steroids, or antidepressants, so many medicines can cause brain fog as a side effect. A variety of herbs may do the same. Just because it's natural doesn't mean it can't cause brain fog. Combinations of medicines can cause brain fog as well. So can other drugs, alcohol, cocaine, marijuana, any type of drug that alters your mind. changes in your body chemistry, sodium, potassium, calcium, and so on, eating disorders, anorexia, sleep apnea, unstable asthma, cardiovascular disease after a heart attack or heart surgery, unstable hypertension, blood pressure medications, seizure disorders, brain problems like Alzheimer's disease and other dementia, brain injury, concussions, bleeds, other brain disorders such as multiple sclerosis, surgery, anesthesia, or combinations of serious illnesses, emotional trauma, and then spiritual illumination and ecstatic states. So the solution to your brain fog will obviously depend on the cause of your brain fog. What is the treatment for brain fog and mood disorders? You treat the physical disorder. In Irene's case, she needed to take stock of her multiple sclerosis. And you? Sit down with a practitioner you trust and look at the lists of causes for brain fog and mood disorders. Do not get a set of physicians who tell you what to do or tell you just what you want to hear. Get a balanced team approach. With the help of that team, you'll elucidate not just what the cause of your brain fog is and its appropriate treatments, but whether or not you need to pare down that laundry list of supplements, herbs, and medicines. Once you've identified the cause of your brain fog, you can then focus on treating just the mood using solutions from the earlier sections of this chapter. If you still have problems remaining with focus and attention, especially during hormonal events, you may want to listen to Chapter 5 on memory. If anxiety and trauma are the problem causing your brain fog, go to Chapter 2 on anxiety. And finally, if you ruled out all these causes and you find you're in the midst of a spiritual event that is disconcerting you from planet Earth, go to Chapter 6. It can also be helpful to step away and take a meditational moment for yourself. There's a spiritual teacher named Baal Shem Tov who taught about the power of the self-imposed exile. What is the self-imposed exile? You travel away from a familiar place. You take only a few common objects. For some, it's a long trip away from home. For others, it's just a little jaunt. A spiritual journey in this way helps you deal with sadness and breeds humility. Such sabbaticals help you drive away distraction, focus on the emotion, and hear the voice of your soul. The self-imposed spiritual exile helps you in your mind to observe, describe, and allow. Not run away, not push away, and not try to control, but simply allow the moment. Whether your depression comes from being angry about some events that you can't do anything about, or sadness or fear, taking a spiritual siesta helps you get spiritual clarity. And while you're in a self-imposed exile, you realize you're not alone. In fact, while disconnected from the familiar, you get the opportunity of being connected with your higher power, God, or whatever you want to call it. You are with spirit. You are not alone. The affirmations. If you have brain fog that's increasing your chance toward depression and moodiness, look at it from the perspective of medical intuition. Brain fog often shreds the barrier between brain and body. In medical intuition, brain fog is a sixth center issue. The sixth center has to do with perception and thought. If you have this cloudy mind, it impairs your capacity to see your way through a problem. And by definition, you may have a sort of blindness toward it. Get a seeing eye coach. That is, get someone to help you see your way through your problem. Here's another way to look at barriers in your mind. When you say an affirmation, does a negative thought come up? Whenever you say an affirmation, and a negative thought comes up, that's a barrier, And noticing that is great because it's like doing a functional MRI. It lets you know that there is a thought pattern in your brain, a barrier, that's preventing you from changing. It gives you a chance to see what barriers are in the way of your healing. Louise Hay has done extensive work on barriers and how to dissolve them. There are barriers in our lives to forgiveness, barriers in our lives to criticism, resentment, fear, and guilt. The most powerful affirmations for dissolving them are the following. I love and approve of myself. By choosing loving and joyous thoughts, I create a loving and joyous world. I am safe and free. The message behind the mood. Whether you have problems with mind, body, depression, moodiness, trauma, or brain fog, to maximize your healing, find the medical intuitive message behind the mood. Mood is a part of our body's intuitive guidance system that lets us know that something needs to change. In the middle of the chaos, stop. Pull yourself out of what's happening. Like a seagull going above the sea, try to get another perspective. What is precipitating this mood? What have you lost? That's sadness. What is disrespecting you? That's anger. What do you think is threatening you? That's fear, and so on. If you can start the process of naming the emotion, you can learn how to respond to it effectively and then release it. By doing this process, which is actually the first step in dialectical behavioral therapy, you may stop the emotion in the brain from causing a domino effect and turning into a health problem in the body. Chapter 2, Anxiety. Has nervousness made it hard for you to feel comfortable around people? Has fear made it hard for you to use all of your gifts, talents, and skills in education and work? Does worry prevent you from changing and growing and aging with confidence? If this is true, then anxiety is right now, this moment, affecting your brain and body. For the last 30 years, during almost every consultation I've had, someone has always said, well, I'd do that if it weren't for the fear. I'd change my job. I'd go after a better relationship. I'd ask for a raise. It goes on. As Louise Hay says, without the fear, imagine the possibilities. Whether you have always had chronic worry, whether you've had that long, slow burn of fear, whether you've had obsessions and compulsions and difficulty with control, whether you've had trauma in the past that makes you panicky and jumpy, or whether you have a terror of something life-threatening, this chapter is for you. Ways of looking at fear. Fear is an important part of our intuitive guidance system, protecting us from something we perceive as harmful. It prevents you from running into the middle of traffic or throwing caution to the wind. However, if fear holds you back from utilizing all your potential, you have a problem. If fear of rejection prevents you from meeting the love of your life, anxiety is keeping you from living fully. If fear of criticism and failure is preventing you from utilizing all of your career and intellectual gifts, then anxiety and worry are blocking your potential. And finally, if you're afraid of being alone, you may find yourself stuck in a relationship that may, in fact, be abusive. On one hand, fear can protect us, but taken to extreme, it can paralyze us. Brain-body anxiety. Just like brain-body depression, brain-body anxiety is very common. We all know it's like to emotionally feel nervous, panicky, uneasy, or worried. However, body anxiety is when your muscles get tense, your digestive tract feels bloated and stuck. You might feel like you have to go to the bathroom, or you might feel constipated. Sometimes you feel short of breath, or your heart starts to race. You might feel that you have that proverbial lump in your throat. You might have problems with paying attention. Your mind might go blank. You might feel dizzy, have vertigo, and even feel like you're losing control. Ultimately, we all know what it's like from time to time to shake with fear and be immobilized by terror. However, for about a third of us, panic and anxiety can escalate to the point where we can have trouble leaving our houses, agoraphobia. Other people can avoid work promotions for fear of failure. And last but not least, some people have been traumatized in relationships or in war, or their families have been so frightened or victimized that they re-experience that fear in their current lives through shakiness, speechlessness, and numbness. Louise Hay believes there's a choice between love and fear. Think about it, love and fear. We experience fear with change, and we experience fear when we're not changing. Either way, we're going to feel fear. We experience fear with the future, and we experience fear if we don't have a future. We experience fear when we take a chance, and we feel fear when we have no choice. We feel fear when we're alone, and we might feel overwhelmed with fear when we're in a crowd with too many people. Finally, we may be afraid of intimacy, but on the other hand, when our loved one leaves, we're afraid. Clearly, fear is part of the human experience, so Louise Hay is right. We do have a choice between love and fear, but we need to know that love and fear go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Love is the miracle we are all looking for, not vanity, not arrogance, but love. A great respect for ourselves and gratitude for the miracle of our bodies and our minds. Remind yourself, next time you are frightened, of this simple concept. Fear is not trusting yourself or loving yourself. And to put an additional spin on the issue, perhaps fear is an opportunity to employ faith. Faith in the divine, in the universe, or in a power outside of yourself. Remind yourself of just these concepts the next time you are not feeling good enough and it's interfering with your ability to make a decision. More about anxiety, faith, and spirituality in Chapter 6. Anxiety and medical intuition. In medical intuition, anxiety is part of your emotional guidance system that tells you that something needs to change. In fact, anxiety is one of the most overly developed parts of your intuition. I have yet to meet anyone who was extremely intuitive who wasn't also very anxious. The amygdala, the area in the brain for intuition, is also the area for anxiety. So if you want to be intuitive, embrace, love, and honor that area of your brain that's twitchy and nervous. Susan Jeffers wrote a wonderful book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. That book could have been named Feel the Intuition and Do It Anyway. You may feel fear when approaching something new in your life, when you feel something new and unfamiliar, when you feel something you think could threaten you. Your adrenal gland produces epinephrine, that peppy neurotransmitter. For some individuals who are prone to that intuitive, anxious brain, stimulants like coffee push them over into panic, and they become change phobic. Susan Jeffers says that the real issue is not feeling the fear, but how we hold the fear. Understand that change comes and goes. It's not static. And the fear, along with the change, can come and go. Intuition also comes and goes. You may sense that someone will call you, and then the phone rings, and then it's over with. You may sense that something painful might happen to a loved one. It comes, and it goes. To handle brain, body, fear, and anxiety is to learn how to handle the change and intuition. How? We learn how to, 1, feel the fear, 2, indicate what precipitated it, and 3, respond to it effectively, and 4, release it. Similarly, you might also name the intuition associated with the fear, name what precipitated it, respond to it effectively, and release it. If you can't process fear and intuition effectively, it stops being a momentary thing. Instead, it will marinate, and it will create a daisy chain of symptoms in your brain and body. What was first a fear or intuition then becomes nervousness, twitchiness, and a variety of other flavors of fear. Biochemical symptoms occur in your brain and body. Muscle tensing, lower back pain, nausea, butterflies in your stomach, constipation, diarrhea, shortness of breath, lump in your throat, problems with focus and attention, see chapter 4, brain fog, see chapter 1, clenching your teeth. All these are body symptoms of anxiety. They might also be body symptoms of an intuitive guidance system telling you that something around you needs to be attended to. How do you know you have body anxiety? Let's go center by center. If you have fear and anxiety that stays stuck on in your brain body, it creates a daisy chain of events, disrupts epinephrine and cortisol in your adrenal gland, affects your immune system and muscle contraction in your body, and increases your chance toward the following problems. First center. Eczema, hives, psoriasis, and rashes, indicating that you might have problems with feelings of safety and security in the world. Intuition letting you know there might be something wrong or a problem with someone in your family or another group in your life. Second center, lower back pain, bladder problems, problems with libido, impotence, or unstable hormones, letting you know you might be anxious about performing sexually or financially. It may also let you know intuitively that there's a problem in a relationship with a partner. Third center, colitis, diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, nausea, ulcers, excessive eating, craving alcohol, unstable blood sugar, or loss of appetite may be letting you know that you feel criticized or anxious about work or your self-image. Alternately, your intuition might be letting you know there's a problem with someone at work or in your environment who is criticizing you. Fourth center, respiratory allergies like hay fever, shortness of breath, and asthma, as well as heart palpitations may be letting you know that you have anxiety about speaking up in front of people when you feel criticized or rejected. Alternately, your intuition may be picking up that someone near you may not feel safe and secure. Fifth center, a lump in the throat, grinding your teeth, sore throat, or hypothyroidism might let you know that you fear rejection and criticism if you were to speak. Sixth center, dizziness, vertigo, insomnia, problems with attention and memory, letting you know you are insecure about the way you think or see in the world. Seventh center, problems with life-threatening illness or aging in general. All of these areas in your body are examples of brain-body anxiety, letting you know intuitively that fear has run amok in your life and something needs to be paid attention to. Your brain on fear. Louise, just like other mind-body practitioners and psychologists, see the connection between fear, thoughts, and our experiences. There are many people who say we create the pain in our life. It's a little more complicated than that. As we said in the last chapter, if trauma shapes our brain to be drawn toward relationships and experiences that unwittingly duplicate our past trauma, then saying that we create the pain in our life may be only half the story. Me, being a neuroscientist and medical intuitive, I'm more likely to describe the phenomenon as the following. Science shows us that like a moth to a flame, biochemistry of fear and memory areas in our brain is molded toward reenacting the painful events in our life. Does that mean we are to blame for adversity? Better way to help ourselves heal our brains and our bodies to create health and happiness would be this. To identify how fear in our brain has corrupted brain circuits so that we might not be able to see happier options, better opportunities to choose healthy friends, family, mates, education, and work. This chapter is about helping you heal the brain circuits for fear in your body and brain, whether you're predisposed to anxiety by genetics, trauma, or otherwise. Now it is well known whether to mind-body practitioners like Louise, psychologists, or brain scientists, that fearful thoughts perceive the environment in a fearful way, and that increases our chance toward making less skillful choices within our families, relationships, finances, work, and so on. Part of fear is not knowing, and when you can allow yourself to learn the skills to manage fear, you can learn to thrive in the world of healthy families, relationships, finances, and so on. As Louise has noted, we all hear things from our childhood on. The sounds of our parents, fearful voices warning us of danger. It's what we do with those voices and those experiences that matters. If the people around you tell you to be afraid, if they tell you to experience life as always going to be unsafe, your thoughts will then tell you that the world is going to be a fearful place. And yes, having a serious trauma, sexual abuse, incest, physical abuse, and a marriage will prime your brain and body for fear and anxiety. You will be more likely to perceive the world, relationships, and families as fearful. However, we can change our thoughts, which will change how we see the world, so we can make better choices in relationships and families and move away from recreating our trauma and tragedy. You can't do anything about being caught in a flood, a typhoon, a war, or an environment where you're a refugee. You can't do anything about past sexual abuse, rape, or emotional or physical tragedy. And it's true that some of us believe we chose this life, and we chose our parents, and we chose these struggles we're experiencing. I'm simply trying to help all of us within the life we're born into learn to shape our brains and bodies so we can see the world as safer and more secure, so we can live with less fear. The Fear Network. How does science support healing your mind with meditation, affirmations, and intuition? To create wholeness in brain and body, we need to look at fear as a network. There is a fear network in our brain that is connected to vision, to hearing, and to our bodies and our health. There is a series of places in the brain that create fear. Primary area is the amygdala. All that we see, hear, smell, and taste gets funneled into the amygdala, especially what we've seen and heard from the past. There are two other brain areas that take the fear we've experienced in the amygdala and then make us act and think in a repetitive, compulsive fashion. One area is in the frontal lobe. It's called the anterior cingulate. The other area is called the caudate. You don't have to be a neuroanatomist to know that when you're anxious, you tend to have a gerbil wheel in your head that runs through your anxiety over and over, and then you want to try to do something to change or control it, like checking the stove, making lists, cleaning your desk, and so on. There are other areas in the brain that have to do with those thought patterns that make us feel more anxious or less. The frontal lobe area, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, or DLPFC for short, if you want to impress your friends at a cocktail party, is the fourth area of the fear network. This area affects that aspect of fear in your thoughts that influences family, relationship, money, and work. So, you understand that by having fear in multiple areas of your brain, you have multiple capacities for resolving anxiety in your brain and your body. That's why solutions for anxiety aren't one size fits all. The fifth area of the fear network is the orbital frontal area for empathy and bonding. This is the area that determines how your trauma and anxiety affect your relationships. The sixth area The insula is the body area where fear affects your health. Mind you, the insula connects to the adrenal gland, the area that governs the stress hormones cortisol and epinephrine. Yes, that's right. The adrenal gland stress response that's associated with adrenal fatigue. When you're fearful, when you have brain anxiety, you then get body anxiety. Your muscles tighten, your digestive tract tightens, you get constipation or diarrhea. Your bladder and your vagina muscles tighten, causing uncomfortable sensations in both areas. Your heart races, you feel short of breath, and it doesn't end there. You feel that lump in the throat, the dizziness, the vertigo, your mind races, you can't focus or pay attention. Anxiety can affect any or all regions of this network, and like a telephone network, once it hits one region, it reverberates and can hit all of them. Something you see that's anxiety-provoking goes to the amygdala and can then go to the insula, causing a body reaction, hit your adrenal gland, release cortisol, influence your immune system, and the next thing you know, within 24 to 48 hours, you have the flu. Or the epinephrine body reaction gives you a headache. And you'll say to someone, don't tell me that, you're giving me a headache. Rewiring the network. So there you have the six brain areas of the fear network. Here's the thing. You can rewire this network. Just like a house that's been wired incorrectly for electricity, your brain can be rewired toward feeling safe and secure. By turning up the volume and intensity in any of these brain regions, you can alter how you see, hear, feel, and experience the world. You can change your thought patterns with affirmations via the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex using statements like these. I release and let go of fears old and new. There is no longer any need for me to scare myself. I forgive all those who ever hurt me. I forgive myself for hurting others. I forgive myself for blaming and punishing myself. I forgive my parents for their fears and limitations. I now declare for myself that I am safe. I sleep and wake and move in complete safety. You can do the same with cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, or psychotherapy. You can also change the behavior that's wired in the caudate or anterior cingulate by working with a coach, a vocational counselor, and so on. You can work with a somatic therapist on your body memories. You can work with an immunologist and nutritionist on that adrenal fatigue, adrenal gland, cortisol pattern. You may have been terrorized or traumatized in the past. You may have had fear in your life then, but you can create a world in your brain and your body that's safe, peaceful, and secure. Then there's the medicine. With it, we can learn to turn up the volume and turn down the pitch of any of these brain areas with supplements, medicines, or other treatments. Traditional psychiatry uses SSRIs like Lexapro or Zoloft to treat anxiety. We may use alternative remedies like 5-HTP, rhodiola, GABA, valerian, kava kava, passion flower, lemon balm, magnesium, and others. See details in the All Is Well clinic. Traditional psychiatry has supported psychotherapy or psychoanalysis that helps you develop a supportive relationship with a therapist. Louise Hay helps you use affirmations to do loving the inner child exercises, where you learn to reparent yourself. Either or both of these practices can help you rewire your brain away from fear and toward promoting a more loving, less fearful world. Can these practices really change the structure of those six areas in our brain that work? In fact, the science of epigenetics says they can. Yes, early emotional trauma alters your brain circuits, creating changes in the memory areas of the amygdala and hippocampus. However, those cells in your hippocampus grow and give birth to new ones, just like you can grow and give birth to a new you. We can't change the past, but we can create a new future. How to switch your brain from fear to safety? First, don't use the words stressed or overwhelmed, because when you say stressed or overwhelmed, you don't know you're actually anxious. Those words aren't going to help you heal your brain circuits for fear. If anything, they just keep the nervousness reverberating within your brain and your body. For decades, people have lumped anxiety, nervousness, and panic together under the blanket term of stress. I'm so stressed. You're so stressed. I'm worried. I'm nervous. There's so much stress at work. So then we have stress reduction exercises. You sit in a position, you breathe, you're saying, I'm reducing my stress. Then you go back to work and you get panic-stricken only to return to the pose of, I'm breathing and releasing my stress. Only to go back into the workplace and get panic-stricken again. Then you go home and you worry about work. Back to the relaxing place. Are we unstressed yet? No, we're not, because we haven't named the emotion, the fear, or the anxiety, so we can respond to it effectively and then release it. As Dr. Phil says, if you can't name it, you can't fix it. So, if you say, I'm nervous, you can then look around and say, why am I nervous? And then you'll get a thought pattern, oh, it's because I think I'm going to fail. And that's in your frontal lobe. You then get to look around the fear network to see where the emotion and thought is coming from. And only then can you learn to change the thought so that you can release the feeling and move on. After you've gotten rid of the words from your vocabulary like stressed and overwhelmed, look into discontinuing the use of the terms out of sorts and overcome. While you're at it, eliminate nervous breakdown too. After a 3-year residency in psychiatry, I still don't know what a nervous breakdown is. Not that we've gotten rid of words that make it hard to identify the emotion, fear. Let's work on thought patterns that help us all marinate in nervousness and worry. Eliminate the word should. Woulda, coulda, shoulda are self-blame words that are embedded in your frontal lobe that make you worried and tense. As if you didn't feel disempowered enough, criticized enough, there you are saying, well, you know, I should have done this. Not only are they criticizing you, you're criticizing you too. As Louise says, should is a word that makes us prisoners. And as a result, that thought in your frontal lobe just makes you more fearful. Louise says to change the should into could. I like that. Cognitive behavioral therapy would like that. Why? Because should tells you what you did wrong in the past. Could is something that you can look forward to changing. It's more empowering. And so, now is your opportunity to perform a radical worry word-ectomy on all the vocabulary that's disempowering, self-criticizing, and paralyzing you from moving forward and changing. In the next chapter on addiction, you'll get an opportunity to remove shame and blame words as well. There is an intricate connection between anxiety, shame, and addiction. The All Is Well Clinic. The rest of this chapter is devoted to the All Is Well Clinic, where you get a virtual experience of how to heal your anxiety, worry, and panic. Part 1. Chronic Worry. Has your brain become a prisoner to worry? Listen to the list of symptoms here and find out which apply to you. Mind symptoms. You feel fear, worry, anxiety, and apprehension about your family, relationships, work, or children. Your fears about nearly every area of your life tend to consume your thoughts and feelings. You have been nervous, anxious, and worried since an early age, and it's hard for you to remember a time when you didn't worry. You have problems with irritability and moodiness. You also suffer from hard-to-treat depression. Body symptoms. Your muscles are tight, and often it makes your joints ache. You get easily exhausted. You feel restless, keyed up, and jumpy most of the time. Sleep has been a perennial issue. Either you have problems falling asleep or staying asleep, or you have unrestful sleep. You have trouble focusing and paying attention. Your mind often goes blank. You have problems with allergies. You have problems with eczema and psoriasis. You have problems with nausea, heartburn, and IBS. You experience urinary urgency and or frequency. You have hypothyroidism. You experience dizziness or vertigo. Your blood pressure is unstable, or your hair is thinning. If this sounds like you, chronic worry may be preventing you from having the happiest, healthiest life you can experience. Listen on to the following case. Adele. Worry, worry, worry. Adele came to me because, well, she was always worrying. The intuitive reading. When I first started to read Adele, her mind swirled with a sense of failure about her life or everyone else's life. All I could see were thoughts about catastrophes, whether it was in her family, finance, work, everywhere. The body. Adele's mind was a buzz of thoughts and activity, so much that it seemed she couldn't focus or pay attention. The muscles felt tight in her neck, like rubber bands, making for band-like pressure around her head. The muscles in her colon seemed tight as well. Did she have problems going to the bathroom, having irregular bowel movements? Then there was the lower back, the joints. Muscle tightness seemed to be in every joint in her body. Her sciatic area, her wrists, all of her joints seemed like they were in a vise. Finally, I wondered how Adele could get to sleep with all those bees buzzing in her head. The facts. Adele said that for as long as she could remember, people had called her a worrywart. She worried about her parents, their marriage, their finances. She worried about getting into a good school. Then she worried about whether she could get into a good college. She worried about politics, the economy. Later, she worried about her daughter Barbara and her family. Worry, worry, worry. In fact, much of her mind was so taken up by worrying about the future catastrophes that she had trouble focusing on anything else. Let's add up the diagnoses that Adele got to worry about. She was told by doctors that she had 1. ADHD, 2. Tension headaches, possibly migraines, 3. Depression, 4. Anxiety, 5. IBS, 6. Lower back pain, and 7. Generalized anxiety disorder. The solution. If you, like Adele, are worrying, how does that lead to all those symptoms? How do you get all those physical problems with anxiety? Like depression, where there's body depression and brain depression, anxiety has the same format. We can see brain and body anxiety as well. When the amygdala starts to spike out anxious signals, all 6 members of the fear network start to reverberate nervousness, and, as you remember, the signal gets sent down to the adrenal gland. The adrenal gland creates epinephrine, which makes all of the muscles in your body tend to tighten. That accounts for the headaches, the joint pain, and over time, exhaustion. The tight muscles also change the peristalsis in your bowel, and increase your chance toward constipation and IBS. The epinephrine disrupts your capacity to focus, pay attention, ultimately remember things. Thus, you may be diagnosed with ADHD. The chronic anxiety increases your chance for fatigue, adrenal fatigue, and chronic fatigue syndrome. Needless to say, all that exhaustion during the day and that over-adrenalated epinephrine from the adrenal gland makes it hard for you to fall asleep at night, thus insomnia. The treatments. If you, like the vast majority of people, suffer from chronic anxiety and worry, you may have learned it's not easy to get rid of. You'll try a medicine, nutritional supplement, herb or acupuncture, or other treatment. After a month, you may get some relief, but 2 months later, the worry and panic come back with a vengeance. Why? I remember when I was in medical school, back in the olden days, primary medicines for anxiety were Valium, Xanax, and Clonopin. Medicines that tend to work at a specific dose for a month or two and then stop working. I might add these medicines, benzodiazepines, are highly addictive. I remember I asked one of my teachers how long people were supposed to stay on these medicines, and he said, as long as the person feels anxious. The problem with anxiety and worry is that the brain deals with fear like a shell game. If you have one treatment that addresses one area of the fear network, the other areas somehow compensate, and a month or two later, your anxiety is back. In the olden days, doctors would just raise the dosage of the medicine, and you'd end up getting addicted to more and more meds that eventually would stop working. I'm thrilled, and you will be too, that people don't have their anxiety treated that way anymore. Why is anxiety such a cagey or slippery symptom to nail down and get rid of? Fear is a fundamental part of how your brain and body are structured. You'll learn later on in this chapter that many people who tend toward nervousness and anxiety are more likely to have exaggerated intuitive gifts. It's impossible to keep the intuitive gifts and get rid of the anxiety completely. So many people who are very intuitive, porous, or sensitive also struggle with lifelong anxiety. If this is you, you'll learn how to capture the intuitive gifts and soothe the edginess and worry that accompany this brain style. If you suffer from anxiety and worry, you'll need to learn how to soothe the chronic anxiety that reverberates in the fear circuits in your brain. First, consider dialectic behavioral therapy and/or cognitive behavioral therapy. Dialectic behavioral therapy specifically is a class that will teach you how to regulate your anxious mind and body. Consider it a class like driver's ed that teaches you how to operate your unique, edgy, tense brain. Consider various body treatments that can reduce the keyed-up chronic adrenalization that your mind-body fear network creates. Regular daily exercise, 30 to 45 minutes at least 5 days a week, releases opiates that can calm, distract, and transform your worry. Massage increases serotonin from one area of your fear network. The added benefit of this treatment is that it can help with the muscle pain. Yoga is another movement practice that with deep breathing exercises and relaxation can profoundly improve anxiety and worry. Yoga also helps with breathing and blood pressure irregularities that tend to occur with chronic worry. Meditation can help discipline your mind to help you stop or control your worried thoughts. Many of the exercises you learn in dialectic behavioral therapy are in fact based on mindfulness meditation. Consider a hobby, anything that involves a repetitive task. An activity like knitting or woodworking, especially if it requires the same movement over and over again, engages part of your fear network to release GABA, a calming neurotransmitter. akin to rocking a baby when we do some mindless, repetitive, cyclic task. It disengages our mind and seemingly puts us in another realm, and for the moment, disconnects us from our worry. Repetitive prayers or chants evoke the part of our brain, the caudate, that releases GABA. In addition to the pharmacology of prayer, when you set aside regular time for contact with the divine or greater power, you are exercising faith, which is, in a way, the universal antidote to anxiety and worry. The medicines. While you're learning how to rewire worry and anxiety that chronically reverberate in your brain and body, you may want to use nutritional supplements, herbs, and medicines. Taking 5-HTP, 100 milligrams three times a day, can hit the serotonin receptor as those SSRIs like Lexapro, Paxil, and Effexor do, and 5-HTP doesn't give you sexual side effects. Rhodiola is also anti-anxiety, and it buffers your body's anxious tendency toward cortisol problems. And finally, ashwagandha is also excellent, like rhodiola, for brain and body anxiety. There are some nutritional supplements, helpful alternatives for generalized anxiety disorder. Passion flower and lemon balm, especially, can be very helpful. Check your nearest holistic health food center for tinctures or other supplements, but consider avoiding valerian or kava kava. They tend to stop working after 2 weeks. You might be thrilled to know that lemon balm can also help with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia that's associated with Epstein-Barr virus and Lyme because it has antiviral and antibacterial qualities. And both herbs are very helpful for insomnia and digestive problems. Ginkgo biloba goes after the benzodiazepine receptor, that same receptor that Klonopin, Valium, and Xanax do, that we talked about earlier. However, it's not addictive like those medicines, and it also helps with focus and attention, which many people with anxiety tend to have problems with. Be careful, though. It's a blood thinner. Ask your doctor if it's safe for you. There are several types of ginseng that may be helpful. Asian ginseng and Siberian ginseng are two of these. The ginsengs are specifically good for brain anxiety and body anxiety because they buffer cortisol that may impact your capacity to have a healthy immune system. The ginsengs also sharpen your attention and memory and help you get to sleep, all of which tend to be problematic when you have anxiety. The next class of medicines is antidepressants. You can take Lexapro, Paxil, Effexor, and other SSRIs for anxiety. However, they're not very helpful for chronic worry. Many people gain weight and have sexual side effects. And, by the way, you might want to minimize the alcohol too because, just like benzodiazepines, alcohol tends to hit the same GABA receptor and combat anxiety, not to mention insomnia. At first, you'll feel great with the alcohol. I'm not nervous anymore. What? Me worry? However, again, you'll have two worries, not one. One, you'll be anxious in the morning as well as possibly have brain fog. And two, you'll end up having increased susceptibility for addiction. There has to be another way. See Chapter 3. The affirmations. So let's just say you've set aside your alcohol and your Valium, and you've considered 5-HTP or rhodiola, ginkgo biloba or ginseng. Is that it? Are you now going to be not nervous? No. It may take a while to rewire the thought patterns in your brain. In addition to cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectic behavioral therapy, affirmations can have a prolonged effect on changing particularly entrenched anxiety-provoking thoughts and worries. When you keep replaying worried thoughts you have been learning since childhood, it makes anxiety even more entrenched in your brain and body. Affirmations are a particularly potent way to change entrenched thoughts from fear to safety. Louise helps us with affirmations like these. Begin to take a deep breath. And as you exhale, let your fear out. Imagine that every time you exhale now, you are releasing old fears. Some a little at a time, and some all at once in a big, big exhale. Now, affirm and declare, I release and I let go. I let go of fears, old and new. There is no longer any need to scare myself. I forgive all those who have ever hurt me. I forgive myself for hurting others. I forgive myself for blaming and punishing myself. I forgive my parents for their fears and limitations. And I now declare for myself that I am safe. I sleep and wake and move in complete safety. I now create a reality for myself of oneness and security. I create an island of safety around me. I can see this island in my mind's eye. It is safe and serene. It is beautiful and green. I walk freely everywhere on this island in perfect peace. This island becomes my world, and everyone in this island enjoys the same safety. We are all peaceful. Everyone in my world is peaceful. I am safe. I am secure. I am at peace. Every corner of my world is a safe place. I am safe in the daytime. I am safe at night. I walk in peace. My inner intelligence always leads me in this peaceful byways. My bed is a safe place. I release the day with love, and I embrace sleep. I am safe when I am asleep. I am safe during the night, and my dreams are dreams of joy. I awaken feeling safe and secure, and I enter a new day with joyous anticipation, for it is a day that has never been lived before. I know and affirm that I am safe in this new day. I am always safe in my home, and all who enter my home do so in safety and in peace. My food is safe and healthful and nourishing. Any room in my dwelling place is safe and peaceful. My home is a peaceful shelter. I am relaxed at home. I radiate love wherever I am. I surround myself with loving people. Only love goes from me, and only love comes back to me. I forgive others and move on. I am forgiven, and I am free. All forms of transportation I use are safe. I am safe in cars and buses and trains and planes. Even on bicycles and skateboards, no matter what form of transportation I use, I am safe and secure. I am able to relax when traveling. I am a peaceful traveler. I know I am safe at work. I work in a place that is harmonious. I love the work I do. I am safe with my coworkers. I am safe with my boss. My job is safe and mine as long as I want it. I am relaxed and peaceful when I am working. Even when working to a deadline, I feel peaceful, and the more peaceful I am, the more efficient I am. I do my best work when I relax. I create a relaxed, joyful atmosphere wherever I am. My boss appreciates and loves the way I work. I am calm and secure at all times. Wherever I go in this world, I take my island of safety with me. This island of safety also protects my family. Every member of my family is safe and protected. I release all worries about my family. I surround every member of my family in thoughts of safety and peace. The dark is my friend. The dark is company to me. I move through the dark with ease. I am safe in the dark. There is nothing in the dark for me to fear. I am always safe and well protected, from the smallest to the largest, from the youngest to the oldest, from home to school to work to play, and home again. Everyone is moving through life in peace and harmony. I free my family to be who they are, and to live life in their own way, knowing that no harm can befall them. My family also allows me to be who I am, and to live my life in the way I think is best. We are all safe and free. I relax in the knowledge that I am at peace. I feel safe and secure in my spiritual beliefs. I feel at one with my Creator. I know that my Creator has only my joy and my well-being in mind. I trust in the power that created me to protect me at all times and under all circumstances. I was created to be all that I can be. I am safe with love. All my lessons are easily learned. I easily release that which no longer works. It is safe for me to learn. I approach new lessons with joyous anticipation. It is easy for me to learn. I am willing to learn. I love to learn new things. Life gives me easy lessons. Finally, in addition to affirmations, consider cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectic behavioral therapy to rewire the thought patterns in your dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex, those words that reverberate in your brain and disrupt your biochemistry toward panic and away from serenity. Part 2, Obsessive and Compulsive Anxiety. Now, when it comes to obsessions and compulsions, do you tend to have this brand of anxiety? Listen to the following list of symptoms. Do you have the following list of symptoms in addition to the symptoms in the last section?